Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to The Kickoff, brought to you by TickPick. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me is my producer and coconut salesman, Brendan Tuma. It's Tuesday. That means it is time to talk about waivers. So after we get through the news and notes, we're going to get to my top 10 waiver wire pickups in an admittedly terrible waiver wire week. Nonetheless, we will soldier on. But first, let's talk about TickPick and how I just bought my son and me and grandpa Celtics tickets for Christmas. And why did I go to TickPick and not some other site? Because at TickPick, they don't charge service fees, okay? That saves their users over $55 million. And now they've teamed up with Zip, which allows you to buy now but pay later for all your tickets. Just choose Zip at checkout. Split your ticket purchase into four installments. That is what I did, as we spend loads of money on the kids for Christmas. So nice to spread it out a little bit there. Just download the TickPick app. Use the code PROS, $10 off your first order when you select Zip at checkout. Again, that's code PROS, $10 off your first order when you download the TickPick app and select Zip at checkout. All right, let's talk about some news and notes. CeeDee Lamb remains in the concussion protocol and missed practice on Monday, which was just an estimation. But Mike McCarthy is apparently optimistic that he is going to clear the protocol before Thursday. I am not nearly that optimistic, but, you know, this at least leaves the door open. I am still planning, as we will talk about when we get to my waiver wire pickups, to be without CeeDee Lamb on Thursday. But Andy Dalton is likely to start Thursday's game against the Lions. X-rays were negative on Justin Fields' ribs, but with such a short turnaround, he's not going to be ready. Meanwhile, Allen Robinson didn't practice, nor did Alvin Kamara. Again, these are just estimated practice reports because it's Monday for a Thursday game, but I would not expect either one of these guys to go. Adam Schefter reports that Michael Carter suffered a low-grade, high ankle sprain that's expected to sideline him 2 to 3 weeks. It's a tough break for Carter, who was a nice breakout star of the last several weeks, but we will talk about that much more when we get to the waiver wire portion. AJ Brown underwent x-rays on his ribs, which came back negative, but he's still undergoing more testing. Given the fact that they have a bye the week after this, it's really difficult to see AJ Brown suiting up for this one. And again, ribs, shoulder, chest, whatever you want to call it, it's something painful, and he probably needs a little bit of rest for a team that is going to the playoffs. Nick Sirianni said that Jordan Howard suffered a knee sprain on Sunday, and he is expected to miss at least week 12 against the Giants. So that should bolster the stock of Miles Sanders and, to a lesser extent, Boston Scott. Arthur Smith didn't have an update on Calvin Ridley, who is now eligible to return from the reserve NFI list, but certainly don't expect him to return just yet. Kevin Savansky is hopeful that Kareem Hunt is going to play in week 12. I don't think so. Realistically, I think he's going to need at least another week here as he returns, but he should be back sometime in December. Ian Rapoport reports that the football team is expected to get Logan Thomas back from IR, where he was with his hamstring injury, at least back at practice this week. He knows, however, that he hasn't been cleared to return, but the expectation is that he's going to start his 21-day practice window. So hopefully he can go this weekend, but if not, should be sometime soon. Jamal Agnew is going to miss the rest of the 2021 season with a hip injury that at least, you know, gives us a chance that Laviska Shenault is going to be moved back to the slot where he belongs, but I'm not making much of a move based off of this injury. Cortland Sutton signed a four-year, $60.8 million contract extension with the Broncos as they continue to lock up their wide receivers with both Tim Patrick and Sutton. Cowboys tackle Tyron Smith is expected to return for Thursday's game. That's a big boost here to Dak Prescott. Adam Trautman sprained his MCL, and he is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks after a really nice game that he had. And really, he's been playing, you know, pretty well of late. He just hasn't really cracked that top 12 tight end status. Broncos tackle Garrett Bowles tested positive for COVID, so obviously his status is in doubt for this weekend. And Taysom Hill signed a four-year, $95 million extension with the Saints. Now, he's not going to make all that money, but still, you know, the Saints have some sort of plan for Taysom Hill, and I really can't wait till I figure out what it is. All right, let's get to my top 10 waiver wire pickups. Again, these are players who are rostered in fewer than 50% of leagues. I'm recording this again on Monday night. If there's any big development, we'll have to deal with it on the next show. But I will say, again, sometimes we say, it's kind of a weak waiver wire week. This is really weak to the point where, like, I don't know, three or four guys who make it to this show and in the top 10 aren't really even worth picking up unless you're in super, super deep leagues. But this is what we're left with. So let's start with it and let's go with Tre'Quan Smith to begin. He is kind of quietly strung together a few productive games here. Three targets, three catches, 33 yards, and a touchdown against the Bucs. Three catches, 53 yards against the Falcons. Four catches, 44 yards with the touchdown against the Titans. and now 5 catches for 64 yards against the Eagles. You could do worse at wide receiver for sure. Now, they get the Bills on Thursday, so that's just not where you're going for fantasy production. But then Dallas, the Jets, Tampa Bay, he won't be like a wide receiver, you know, 3 or anything like that. And who knows what's going to happen at quarterback for the Saints, but he is someone you can look at in deeper formats for a little bit further down the road. At number 9, it's Robbie Anderson. So we've seen at least a little something here, I guess, that we can get excited about. Back-to-back games with 6 targets, 9 catches total, a touchdown, just 67 total yards, but the bar was really low. I don't expect Anderson to provide much value, and I'm not starting him certainly this week against Miami, but the Carolina offense does look a little bit better here. They look a little more efficient, and he's got a history of success. We've seen it. We've seen him do extremely well in the past. So if you are playoff bound and you want some upside potentially for the future, it's there, but still we're a long way away from relevance. At number 8, it's Qadree Ollison. I don't really want to add Ollison, but we're looking at a player who was added from the practice squad and very clearly looked like the most explosive running back on Atlanta. That's not saying much. 9 carries, 34 yards, 2 catches for 0 yards, but we know Mike Davis isn't the answer. Wayne Gallman is just a backup, as Arthur Smith said. And even if Cordero Patterson is out, then perhaps Ollison again gets the lead role against Jacksonville, and maybe he can produce there. But we are talking very, very deep leagues and a pretty remote chance of success here. Still, that's a top 10 pickup at this point this week, just because he's a running back who at least has some sort of plausible path of relevance. At number 7, it's Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. I get it, no one wants to start him. But 8 targets, 7 catches, 107 yards, that's not something really you can ignore. Sometimes you can ignore it, and I probably would here, except who exactly is Ryan Tannehill going to throw the ball to on Sunday? Julio Jones is on IR. Marcus Johnson is certainly going to be out with his hamstring injury. We just talked about A.J. Brown. I'm glad x-rays were negative, but certainly seems dicey. The running game is non-existent. Maybe it's Chester Rogers here, but you know, Westbrook-Ikhina was productive and the primary receiving target. Now they get an awful matchup against the Patriots. The defense is lights out. They're shutting down opposing wide receivers. But still, the overwhelming point, the ball has to go somewhere. I mean, making, you know, Westbrook-Ikhina at least an option on the waiver wire is really what you should be doing if you are desperate for a wide receiver. At number 6 is Cedric Wilson. And I know Cedric Wilson isn't great, and he played really poorly against the Chiefs. But if I knew that CeeDee Lamb wasn't going to clear concussion protocol by Thursday, and with Amari Cooper already out for this game, I mean, Wilson would probably be my number 3 or 4 pickup. He's got 7 targets against the Chiefs with both Lamb and Cooper down. You've got Michael Gallup, you've got Dalton Schultz, you've got the running backs, but there's a lot of targets available here against the Raiders, and Wilson should be the beneficiary. That's someone who should at worst rank as what, a high-end flex play, if not a borderline wide receiver 3 this week. Now, we do waiver wire articles with our consensus rankings from our Fantasy Pros analysts. Wilson's 17th among the Fantasy Pros analysts, okay? So I am out on an island here. And again, Mike McCarthy expressed optimism about CeeDee Lamb's availability, but the chance to start someone like Wilson with relative confidence for a week? I mean, it's not worth a significant bid, but it is worth an ad. At number 5, it's Latavius Murray. We all had questions about what it would look like when he finally returned from his ankle injury after missing 4 games. And it was a pretty even split with Devontae Freeman in the first half, but Freeman is better, and he got more work in the second half, and he wound up with 22 running back opportunities. Murray got just 12, so Freeman is the more valuable back, okay? But that doesn't mean that Murray's worthless. Remember, even before J.K. Dobbins got injured, we were drafting Gus Edwards as a solid target late round in fantasy leagues. I mean, the Ravens have always used 2 backs, and even recently they were giving carries to Le'Veon Bell, who wasn't doing much with them, but he was getting the work. Murray should get double-digit touches per game, even with the Ravens running a little bit less than they used to. And he also, you know, has the high-end insurance policy value if something happens to Devonta Freeman. So you can start him as a flex in very deep leagues for now, but really he is more valuable as a bench stash. At number 4, it's the Chicago Bears DST. This is the highest I've probably ever ranked a DST in my waiver wire rankings, which speaks both to the strength of the Bears DST as a start this week, but also the weakness generally of the waiver wire. But you had me at Tim Boyle. He was an interception machine in college. He's likely to start again on Thanksgiving. And again, this last game against Cleveland, he did avoid sacks somehow, but he still threw 2 picks and he passed for only 77 yards. Chicago's middle of the road in terms of defense, and they have had some injuries, but This is a play against the Lions offense, not the Bears defense. Right now, when we're streaming defenses, the Bears are head and shoulders above any other option. So go ahead and pick them up. At number three, it's Tevin Coleman. As we said, Michael Carter is down for 2 to 3 weeks. And that is unfortunate, but it does open up opportunity for other backs. And we haven't talked about the other Jets running back, who I do prefer, so we'll talk about in a second. But in two games, since Coleman's been back from injury, he has 12 touches. But he was the primary ball carrier after Carter went out against the Dolphins, and there's a good chance that that continues. The thing is, Coleman is older, and he's often injured, and the Jets don't play in a lot of positive game scripts here. There are question marks around everything, really. I mean, even if he's the primary runner, it's not a great situation for him. He could be a flex, though, against Houston, which is really what keeps him this high. And there is a plausible path for him having the most value of any Jets running back other than Carter. In other words, more than Ty Johnson. Because if he is the primary running downs back and the Jets lean into the run and they're successful, then he could be good. But again, it doesn't make that much sense for that to be the case. So he's really someone who you can have out there if you're extremely desperate. But other than that, you know, again, like most options, it's not somebody you absolutely need to target. At number two, it's Van Jefferson. I imagine he's rostered in fewer than 50% of leagues just because of the bye, but he has a very, very solid outlook going forward here. Remember how excited we got when DeSean Jackson left? That opened up the third wide receiver role, and that was really valuable for the Rams. Then they added Odell Beckham Jr., and everyone thought, oh, well, this is it for Jefferson. His value's gone. And then Robert Woods was injured for the season, and now everyone really should be back in again. Maybe sort of it's the down game. Last week, you know, maybe it's the fact that Beckham has a reputation of, you know, being a great receiver. And so everybody's just sort of concentrating on him. But Jefferson has 27 targets over his last four games. He only has one touchdown. The yardage isn't crazy or anything like that. But look, why do we recommend DJ Moore so many weeks, right? It's very difficult to ignore the targets here. He's the one wide receiver that is widely available that you can basically sit there and start and think about starting actually weekly as a wide receiver three. Like, he's the only guy. So he's very clearly the number one waiver wire pickup. But again, for me, this is like a 7% bid. Okay, this is not something where I'm going nuts with it, but he is somebody who you absolutely should pick up this week, as is our number one waiver wire pickup of the week, Ty Johnson. Again, probably the weakest number one waiver wire option in a while, just because we don't know the split with him and Tevin Coleman, as we said. You know, Johnson had a couple of games with Mike White. It looked like he could have a huge role. He had, you know, 11 touches, 71 yards against New England, 9 touches, 86 yards, and a touchdown against Cincinnati. Now, he did score against the Colts late, but he was very, you know, lightly involved with Josh Johnson. There are some changes, though. First, we don't, you know, I mean, we know it's not going to be Mike White, right? But we don't know if it's going to be Joe Flacco or Zach Wilson. Second, Tevin Coleman is back, so that changed things a little bit. And that led to an even split in this most recent game here once Michael Carter went out. And Coleman handled the running downs work, as I said, and Johnson was the passing downs guy. So that could, again, lead to Coleman being more valuable, especially this week against Houston. But even there, the Jets aren't favored, and there should be in so many negative game scripts going forward. That should lead to more production for Johnson over Coleman. Also, he's 24. Coleman is 28. It would just behoove the Jets to go with a younger back here, but that is the fallacy of that is the fallacy of rational coaching. Against a weak recommendation, 7% bid, but Johnson is somebody who you want to add. And that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to TickPick. Remember, download the app, use the code PROS, get $10 off your first order when you select Zip at checkout. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'll talk to you again tomorrow morning.